This is Small Day Prayer, and you are listening to the Penn Nation Radio Show.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Penns Nation Radio Show. I am Andy Hughes, and tonight I am joined by my usual co-hosts, Nick Richter, Ken Will, and Joe Depto. But we do have another guest that we would like to introduce. If you're a hockey fan, you've heard this man's voice many, many times. We are pleased to have him on with us tonight. We'd like to welcome Mr. Mike Emmerich, or if you can call him Doc Emmerich from NBC Sports. He's the lead play-by-play announcer for NBC. Mike, once again, thank you for joining us today, and how you doing?
Doing well. I'm glad to talk to you guys, and I'll be interested in your observations on all this hockey stuff, too. But it is fun to get on and talk hockey with you for the first time here.
Well, once again, thanks for coming on. And I guess we'll start out real quick with today's NHL action. The Rangers defeated the Boston Bruins 3-0. And really, the Rangers have started to take control of the Atlantic Division. Obviously, we're Penguins fans. We're looking at that division a lot. But just kind of give us an idea of how you see the NHL is going this year. You know, what teams are for real, what teams aren't for real. Just kind of give us a little bit of insight of how you feel the league has done so far this year.
Well, the one thing, if you're Penguins fans, that you have going for you is that a lot of the Rangers fans still aren't believers yet. They're great. I mean, they're going to wind up with 20 home wins real fast here. It won't be much longer. And that's all they got last year and still made the playoffs. People, I guess, are skeptical about them, but I don't know why, because they've got all the elements I think they need to at least compete for a berth in the conference final. Will they get there? Oh, Lord only knows. It all has to do with whether they have significant injuries to, you know, if Ryan Callahan or Dan Girardi or Lundqvist, of course, perished the thought, would have any kind of serious injury, why that might cause them some trouble. But they, you know, this was impressive tonight. They went into Boston and stoned the Bruins 3-0. That's 7 shutouts for Lundqvist. I like them. I like Pittsburgh. I'm not so sure about Philadelphia because of the goaltending. I think all three of those teams and probably New Jersey will get in. So that means you'll have 4 from the Atlantic. And unless Chicago totally collapses, you'll probably have 4 from the Central Division that'll make the playoffs on the other side. I think in terms of bubble teams, Washington is not showing a whole lot. If they get Mike Green back on defense, they might. But with the challenges they're getting around them from Winnipeg, who are about to have a real long homestand now, and they're terrific at home, they could easily pass Washington and, for that matter, Toronto and get into the 8th spot. We still have lots of time. We're under 8 weeks to go now. But that's the way it looks in the East, and I think the West is I'm just stunned by Detroit, not because I didn't think they were good. I just didn't think they were great, and they're showing an element of greatness. If they put that together and start to play 500 on the road, then they'll really be there. Los Angeles is one of the teams that I had hoped for only because it's a huge city that still hasn't won a lot of people over consistently to hockey, but a good team will do that. And they're in the top 8, but, boy, it's a tenuous hold that they've got. I like Phoenix an awful lot, and even though they started the day in 8th place, I think they're such a good team that's built on team defense that they can actually go higher, and Mike Smith's been terrific for them. So in a nutshell, but that's probably the size of the Jolly Green Giant's head, I guess. I didn't really capsulize it too well, but those are my thoughts about the two conference races. I never call a Stanley Cup winner until 2 weeks are left in the regular season, and the reason for that is that we have the trade deadline on the 27th, and you have to give teams a couple of weeks to adjust to see whether the new players they brought on do better than the ones that they sent away, if they sent any away at all. So that's the reason that we always wait a little bit before we assess whether a team's got the capability of winning the championship after the trade deadline, because usually everybody does a little something.
Doc, as you're taking a look at those the teams that you just listed there, I mean, who stands to make the biggest adjustments at the trade line deadline, or who can, or what kind of trades or plugs can you see going in here in the next couple of weeks?
Well, we talked about it on NBC on Sunday, because the Rangers were one of the teams that we were covering that day. That they, if there's one wish list they'd have, it'd be for a real natural scorer. They have a couple of players that they probably give away, and I know one of the rumors is Jeff Carter from Columbus. Rick Nash, as of today, heavily rumored to be leaving Columbus. The Blue Jackets are so far buried that they now have become sellers, and it's a matter of just saving cash. That's why teams sell off players when you get close to the trade deadline. That would make New York even stronger. I mean, goaltending-wise and defense-wise, I think they're fine. They could use more scoring up front. Los Angeles could as well, and that's the reason that if Columbus traded within the Western Conference, Los Angeles would be a logical place for Rick Nash to go. Or, for that matter, Jeff Carter, he'd be reunited again with Mike Richards, who has had a disappointing year with the Kings.
Doc, we talked a little bit off the air about Detroit, and they just broke the record for home wins, home winning streak tonight with 21 games. With the game being so different now, do you think they should or shouldn't have an asterisk beside them in the record book with overtime wins and all? It's pretty impressive nonetheless, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I think, they can only compete within the rules that they were given. We had no overtime for a while, then we had five-minute overtime, and then we had, the shootout was added coming out of the lockout. It's a great thing for fans. I think it causes all kinds of mishmash when it comes to statistics, but as baseball learned when the American League went to the DH about four decades ago, that I guess we can always come up with eccentricities in statistics. I can understand why traditionalists would say, well, gee, the Flyers back in the mid-70s when they had 20 in a row at home, there were just ties then. So they won flat out. They won 20 games. They didn't have to go past 60 minutes in any of them. I see that argument, but I really feel that Detroit's probably going to build on this even farther, beyond 21. I just think it's an impressive thing to be able to do that, given the fact that we have so many three-point games anymore, and Detroit, I think, had three or four of those in this stretch. I really don't have a problem with it. I mean, they can't change the rules and go back. The only thing that the league could do is just decide that, well, we're going to retrace all of that. And I don't think it's likely because it's really a moot point. I think it's terrific that they've been able to do it, but I don't think it's essential to have an argument over this. Not like it would be the debate about steroids and baseball home runs. I think that's certainly worthwhile.
Yeah. What makes a team like Detroit so good on home ice? And 21 wins in a row at home ice, that guarantees you a .500 season at home already. And they've got plenty of games left on the home schedule, but why such a difference on home ice as opposed to being on the road, do you think?
That's a really good question. I think some of it has to do with just building confidence. I mean, St. Louis was having its World Series parade the day that the Red Wings lost their last game at home. That's how long ago it was, the 3rd of November, for heaven's sake. I mean, that's just amazing, isn't it? Some of it, you could probably write some of it off to the fact that that the home team can put guys out. But when you consider Detroit's depth on their, especially on their first two lines, that's kind of a weak argument because you usually don't have two lines of really solid defensive players to go up against two lines of offensive players. I guess when it comes down to it, it's probably a matter of more confidence at home ice and of course, not having to travel. They're an older team. They watch their schedule when it's designed and when it's put together in the summertime very carefully, so they don't have a lot of back-to-back games in the first 2 months of the season, and they also don't wind up traveling a lot in the first 2 months of the season. They have an older team. They usually play into the playoffs at least a couple of rounds, so they try to balance it out. Now, down the home stretch here, two out of every three games they have left, roughly, are at home. And they don't have that many back-to-backs left. So the schedule is designed perfectly for them to win the conference. I mean, with the lead that they've built now, I think they've got a wonderful chance to win the conference because Vancouver still has quite a bit of travel to do yet. They come into Detroit on the 23rd of February, and then they go right into New Jersey the next night. When they make a swing, they make a real swing, and that's the one advantage Detroit's done with all that for the year. The trips that they have to make are not nearly as bad.
Doc, I'd be remiss since we're based out of Pittsburgh here if I didn't ask you basically what's your general idea of the Pittsburgh Penguins so far? What do you think they need to add at the deadline? What are their strengths and weaknesses, and how do you see them as, you know, in terms of the big picture heading forward in the race to the Stanley Cup?
Well, the big picture for me always starts with a goaltender at playoff time. Is he a proven goaltender? He sure is. He's won a championship and made the big save on Lidstrom with 1.5 seconds to go in 09. And then the defense. Is the defense fine? Yeah, I think the defense is more than fine. I think the one remarkable thing is that given all the injuries they've had, including defensemen, that they've been able to stay in the top eight all year. Lesser teams would have folded by now, would be, you know, down in positions 11, 12, and would very much have the chance of getting into the playoffs a question mark. They'd be in the nature of what Winnipeg and some of those teams are now. That's where they should be. But because of their superior coaching and because they seem to have pretty committed guys in Wilkes-Barre Scranton, that when they call them up, they give them a wonderful effort, and just through scratching and clawing, they're able to gain points. And the ones, just like Detroit, the ones that you get in October and November are worth really about 1.2 points instead of 1.0, because when you get to this time of year, the latter part of February and all of March and the first week of April, the bubble desperation teams raise their level because they have to for survival. And you can't do that and be ready to play the playoffs if you're doing it every day and you're forced into it. The Penguins aren't forced into it. Do they relax and take nights off? Of course not. But it's not do or die. There's not desperation in them because of the points that they got up to now. The one X factor, of course, is Crosby. And I dearly wish that he could get back, but there is absolutely, well, God only knows. That's the only answer. God only knows when he's going to be able to play. It might be 2 weeks from now, and it might be 2 years. That's the trouble with concussions. They're not like a skin disease. They're not even like an MCL and an ACL like Evgeny Malkin had, where you just knew as soon as you heard it, okay, 6 months, that's it. But with this, you have no idea. There's a guy in Winnipeg, Jim Slater, was playing for them when they were the Atlanta Thrashers 2 years ago, got a concussion, missed all of last year. And his symptoms were so bad, he couldn't even put a baseball cap on. Well, when you go through that, I mean, it makes you wonder if you're ever going to do anything again, let alone be a professional athlete. Yet, he is back playing with the Winnipeg Jets this year. So there's certainly hope, and he's getting every possible specialist to work with him and to check in with. And the one difference between now and 25 years ago, when guys just were told they got their bell rung, go back out there, is nobody comes back anymore. On their own, they have to pass a baseline test. They have to go through all the tests with the doctors before they go back out. Penguins have done a wonderful job in ushering all the rest of us through this and telling us the truth is that this is so uncertain. No one knows, and we just have to wait it out.
Well, I'm really glad that you brought up the concussion issue, because that seems to be, you know, that and overall, you know, injuries and, well, you know, welfare of the players, that seems to be such a controversial issue in the NHL right now. What do you think the NHL needs to do or could do, for that matter, to possibly reduce the amount of neurological issues and head issues and these type of problems that happen so pervasively throughout our game today?
Well, the neurological issues, I think they've dealt with about as well as they can. The issues that they have become more marked in our consciousness for a couple of reasons, one of which we're seeing so much more about it in other sports. Number two, we changed our rules coming out of the lockout. Our athletes, of course, are much larger and faster than they were 10 years ago because skating is coached as youth hockey players, athletes in general, better nutrition, just get bigger. And they're faster and more powerful. And when we open up center ice and just let things happen, collisions are going to happen, too. It makes for a more exciting game. Nobody wants to see hockey reduced to the equivalent in football of two-hand touch. But we are going to have more collisions, some of them accidental with teammates, some of them accidental with opponents, some of them intentional with opponents. The intentional ones, I can't urge Brendan Shanahan to come down on these guys more. He's got to just keep bringing a hammer down. Fines don't make a difference. Making guys take days off, that makes a difference. Will it make a difference with everybody? No, there'll always be the Zach Rinaldos of our league that will never get the message until they're given long, long suspensions. But by and large, it'll make an impact, and over time, it will make it better. The other aspect of this that the league is trying to do something about is tailoring equipment so that it's not more dangerous to wear equipment than it is to receive a hit from it, and so that guys that are, you know, in armor, really, every time they hit somebody, it causes some damage either to the guy they're hitting or themselves, unless it's one of those fortunate hits that is just a good rub out that neither guy gets hurt from. Another thing that does happen, and this will happen with a minority of players, is the one hit that you can deliver that will not hurt you as the hitter, but can ring the bell of the guy that you're hitting is one to the head. Sometimes guys are lining another player up to hit them in the shoulder or hit them up high legally, and at the last moment, fearing injury to themselves, become selfish and go for the head. It's a split-second decision, and 5 seconds later, they'll admit it's the wrong one when the guy's lying on the ice, but they make it anyway. So as long as we have those, we're going to have punishment, and as I said, I can only urge Brendan Shanahan to keep doing what he's doing, and as a matter of fact, be even tougher than he's been.
And I think that's a great point, and throughout all this debate, it seems like we really do... We're real quick to label somebody as a dirty player or just absolutely like despicable figure in the league. When in the truth of it is, a lot of these hits, a lot of these collisions are happening unintentionally. That doesn't mean that they should still be happening. They shouldn't go unpunished. But I think fans and media types alike sometimes are quick to jump on the, I don't want to say the hate bandwagon here, but you know the.
No, you're right. I think that's I think you've labeled it properly. That's what it is, and it becomes really good cannon fodder for the press too. And you know, there's a hero-villain relationship that fans accept, particularly in collision sports. Anyway, the bad guys are the guys that are the visitors, and our guys are the heroes. And I said a little while ago, it may have been unfair to Zach Rinaldo, but he got fined for a couple of incidents in a Devils game, and then he got a 2-game suspension within a week later. So he's not getting the message. The guy that got the message is Matt Cook.
Yep.
Matt wound up with some headshots and suspensions, and Mark Savard is not back yet. But he certainly has cleaned up his act this year, so you can reform. Does it totally make up for the grievances of the past? No, the Bruins wouldn't think so. But at least he has reformed enough, and he's still an effective player. So he's changed that part of his game, but he hasn't changed the part that is effective, and that's his penalty killing and his aggressiveness and his willingness to go to tough areas of the ice where you might get hurt.
Mm-hmm. And it's been amazing how people have really taken notice of that, too. Matt Cook's turned around right away, and he's done a lot to change his reputation here. Now, Doc, I got to ask you, Evgeny Malkin right now, the level that he's playing at, have we seen anybody this season even come close to what he's doing on the ice right now?
No, not this season. And it's reminiscent of what he did in 09. He's been magnificent, and you can physically watch him take over a game. Now, this is something Penguins fans have been spoiled with over the past because they've had Crosby to do that. They've had Jágr. They've had Lemieux. They've had a lot of wonderful scoring champions who can turn the course of a game just through their will, because their will added to their skill just, you know, sends the game into orbit. And Washington was in Pittsburgh for a game we had on NBC a few weeks ago, and Malkin took that game over a couple of times on rushes. And then late in the game, and then he got the overtime winner in sudden death. And there were times you could just see all of a sudden this is his game now. The rest of us are just standing around watching. And he's just been dynamite. This is one of those years when if this consistency continues, he'll be the MVP of the league, I think, without argument. So Penguins fans get spoiled again. It's fascinating to see what he can do in certain circumstances, and that's when guys that are born leaders seem to always do something. Ryan Callahan's another example. His skills are not nearly what Malkin's are when it comes to stick handling and scoring, But through his will and taking punishment near the side of the net, he got another goal tonight in Boston. And if you add all of his goals together, you probably multiply the number of goals times 6 feet. And in many cases, you'd have a pretty accurate listing on how long his goal stretched out would be. He goes to really tough areas, but he scores at critical times and leads his team to victory. And he is one of the hit leaders on his team and one of the great guys. You expect that from a guy that's a leader, and the Penguins are getting it from Malkin.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up, because it's good to remind ourselves that we are spoiled with all these players, because it's easy to get into the woe is me act with feeling, you know, the frustration of the Crosby injury as it goes on and on and on. But, you know, you can only look at that so long without also looking at the fact that, man, we have the greatest player in the NHL right now who's playing at the level he's at. And if we turn a blind eye to that just because we don't have Crosby, then we're losing out.
Yeah, one last thought on the Red Wings, you know, this 21 wins tonight. You know what the record for home wins in baseball is?
What?
24. You know who has it? Boston Red Sox of 88 and them Buccos of 78.
Oh, man.
24 wins in a row at home. Can you imagine?
I also have
to say, you know, Detroit might actually get 24 before they're done here, because they've got a lot of games at home. They're not traveling too much. I think they're going to be fine. But regardless, it's just another bizarre footnote on the night. That's all.
Well, I love the fact that, I mean, you are such a Pirates fan. You're always bringing it up. And I have to thank you for Pittsburgh fans. You brought up the Pirates in the NHL All-Star Game in passing. And, I mean, Pirates fans, I think we all threw up our hands in the air, because that's one more mention or one more reference to the Pittsburgh Pirates than I think the Major League Baseball All-Star Game has had in years. And it came in the National League.
Yeah, that's probably true. Was it Jason Bay went a few years ago and didn't even get to bat?
Yeah.
He didn't get in the game. He was the only guy on the National League team that didn't even get in the game. I mean, what kind of a snub is that? Well, anyway, you know, you've obviously pushed the right button here with me, so I'm going to shut up. We'll get back to hockey.
We love you for it, though. We really do.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to give up what is a part of your youth, especially when you get to be 65. I saw my first Pirate game in Chicago when I was 13 years old. And there aren't many Pirate fans in small towns in Indiana, not Indiana, Pennsylvania, Indiana, the state. But I was one of them, and it was largely influenced by radio and listening to KDKA and Bob Prince, and I became a Pirate fan. So then the obligation is not just to watch them on TV, because they were a good team then, 1959. They were only a year away from winning the championship. Well, then I went and saw them at Wrigley Field, and I became hooked at that point. So whether they've performed well the last 18 years or not, and of course the answer is they haven't, the big thing is that through all of this, I still like them. So it's one of those things you don't give up just because they're on a bad streak. It's a long streak, but we always have hope, and I like the manager a lot. I think he does a lot of good things. He just gets off the bus with the not the best players.
Well, yeah, us as Penguins fans, we kind of went through that dark period a little bit with the X-Generation Penguins and, you know, before Sidney Crosby, before Malkin. But you touched on Crosby and Malkin. I kind of wanted to get your take on Chris Letang. I mean, when Sergei Gonchar left, there was a lot of panic of who they're going to put on the point, on the power play. And Chris Letang started out really well and then had that concussion, but he has just been unbelievable since he came back. Just get your thoughts on Chris Letang. I mean, we forget the guy's only 24 years old. He missed a good chunk of games, but still made the All-Star game, and has, in my opinion, made a huge impact on the Penguins this year.
Yeah, he has. And when he came back, they became even better. They became a different team because they had that dimension of that Scott Niedermeyer lent to the Devils for so many years, and not so much in racking up loads of points, but in putting the rest of the team in position that they could go from defense to offense real fast. I think the other value that he has, and not many defensemen are good at it, and so they aren't allowed to do it, and that's shootouts. And I realize the last day of the season, the shootouts don't mean as much because they're subtracted from your win total if you have a tie. But Michael Therrien told me once, because they had a couple of games out in Alberta, they were back-to-back games in shootouts, if I remember the story right, and they're getting into the further innings of the shootout, and there's no decision yet, and he looked at one of his assistant coaches, and he said, what do you think about Chris? Yeah, well, okay. So they threw him out there, and he won the game, and the next night he did the same thing. So those are extra points that you get because of the additional skill that he has. But he's a dynamic defenseman, and I think he's going to be regarded in a decade as one of the NHL's best.
Yeah, he's a player that can completely frustrate you when he's out there on the ice, because there's not really a part of his game that's weak. You know, people would have probably said coming into the league his defensive side of it all wasn't the most polished, but I mean, he's one of the top leaders in hits for the Pens, and he's missed a lot of games. And here's the guy that also missed about 20 games and can be in the top five for defensemen in scoring this year. And that's got to completely frustrate teams whenever you have a guy like Chris Letang out there on the ice.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is that if he sees an offensive chance, he takes it. Because, again, comparing him to Niedermeyer, he's got the skating skill to always get back. So, yeah, he may go up on a play or something, but he's got the speed to just turn around and go hard and get back and get into the defensive position most times. And so the green light's on for him a little more often than it is guys that aren't as mobile as he is. But no, he's a wonderful find for the team. I mean, you look at the marquee value of the players that you have, and it's easy to overlook some other guys that are really, really good quality players. And as I said, you know, the first thing is you have the goaltender. And if you don't have that, you're one of the teams that's looking for it and only has 13 days left to find it, and chances are not going to find it.
Doc, since we were talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins and everything kind of involved with them, I want to, you know, kind of touch on their rivals and who they have to watch out for in the Atlantic Division. Boy, it really looks like the New York Rangers with a 9-point lead are really going to solidify themselves as the beast in the East, and the Philadelphia Flyers are – you know, they're hanging in strong at the 4 seed right now, and even the New Jersey Devils are surging pretty hard right now. What do you make of the Atlantic Division, and who do you think comes out on top?
Hard to say because of the players that each team does not have. Now, we know that they've turned the lights off on Pronger for the rest of the year. If Philadelphia does not replace that quality to defenseman with at least somebody comparable, there's nobody that brings the same bag of tools that Pronger does to a game. But there are guys that can at least be better. And whether they're going to be able to, you know, find one of those in a trade somewhere, I don't know. But if they go down the stretch without a replacement for Pronger, recognizing he's not going to be as good as Pronger, then I like Pittsburgh to go past them. If they get Crosby back, they're going to blow past both Philadelphia, and New Jersey isn't going to be nearly an element. The dangerous thing about the Devils now is that they seem to be finding their defensive game, and they're getting scoring too. They're getting it not only from Kovalchuk, but Parisi has stayed healthy all year, so that makes them doubly difficult. The good thing for Pittsburgh is I don't think anybody's going to catch the Rangers in this division. You pointed that out earlier. And so now the notion is get fourth, because that's the only other spot open to them since the Rangers look like they're going to take the whole conference. So now get fourth. And what that gives you is, unfortunately, in the first round, Philadelphia or New Jersey. I don't think that Ottawa or Toronto or Washington is going to be strong enough to move up. But there's nothing wrong with getting fourth, and it's better to have home ice, as they found out, what, 3 years ago? When they won Game 6 in Philadelphia, that was when Talbot engaged Carcillo, and they eventually clinched that day, and that turned the whole game and the series around. You know, they still had the luxury of coming back home for a seventh game if they had to. And so that's the reason that fourth becomes so important. But I like their chances for fourth, especially if Philadelphia can't improve themselves at the trade deadline.
What do you think about the Boston Bruins, though? They seem to be kind of, you know, they got off to that really red-hot start, and now it seems like they're kind of falling back to earth a little bit. Do you think that they are, you know, a legitimate team to make a run at defending their Stanley Cup champions, or do you think that they're going to kind of fall to the wayside come playoff time?
Yeah, no, I think they're going to be fine. As a matter of fact, I like their chances to get to the conference final right now Even though I said I don't pick a champion, and I don't until we get to the latter part of March. But because of the makeup of their team, because except for Savard, they've been really, really healthy this year. And that's the thing that makes it so hard to handicap races down the home stretch, is you don't know where the carnage is going to come in and which team's going to fall. But so far, the Bruins have been very healthy. And they've got 18 guys back from last year's championship team. They learned with their terrible October, when they were brought in right around Halloween after they'd lost a home-and-home with Montreal, and their coach brought them in and had all of the chairs set up in the meeting room theater style, and they spent time watching the things they were doing wrong in October. And they were given the lesson that if you don't want this to change, it's not going to change. You better want it now. Because by American Thanksgiving, very little changes in the standings. Largely because of what I mentioned earlier, those teams that get the big numbers of points in October and November usually stay right where they are. They may not be in home ice at the end of the year, but they're in the top eight, which is the object of, in addition to entertaining hockey fans, that's the reason for the regular season, is to determine playoff position. So Boston is structured with their goaltending. Both goaltenders are terrific. Both of them have goals against averages that are enviable. And so there's no reason they can't be a conference finalist.
Mike, you've been calling games for a while now. Do you ever recall seeing a team like the Penguins so widely disliked or even hated? It's not like they're a dirty team, but it's pretty much all or nothing. It's either you love them or you hate them. There's really not a lot of in between there. And it kind of reminds me a lot, like maybe throw this back to baseball terms, but the New York Yankees, I mean, they've been so good for so long that it's – like, their fans love them, but everybody else around the league, the fans around the country, seem to really just have some bad feelings about them, you know?
You know, I don't sense that. Maybe you do more because you're Penguins fans.
Yeah.
What I see in people I talk to is a sort of grudging, healthy respect for them. It's roster envy with Crosby and Malkin. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. Boy, we wish we had those guys. We don't, so boo! You know, it's like that. And the sense I have, and especially among people that are not locked into Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, I think if you had to pick a team that was universally hated, it might be more Philadelphia, just because they do bend the rules a lot. They historically have. They will never change, I don't think. And so as a result, there's more of a hero-villain relationship with the Flyers than there is with Pittsburgh. That's the sense I get. Now, as fans, you may see other people coming into Pittsburgh from other teams and just hating your team in your own arena or when you travel somewhere else. But I don't have that sense about Pittsburgh. I sense that they have a grudging respect within the Eastern Conference and a very wide respect from teams in the West and from fans who watch them in the West. You talk to people in Detroit, they may boo Crosby, and that's only because of roster envy. But I think they realize that they had two remarkable final series with the Penguins. And both teams are run really well. They're probably run as well as any businesses in hockey are right now, those two. They're run by capable people. They have owners that are selfless when it comes to giving to the community that they're in. They have general managers who are bright. They have coaches who are bright. And they have star players. If I weren't a season ticket holder, I'd be one. I'd want to be one of either of those teams because they're run the right way. They're run economically, and they're run with an eye on the community, and they win. And, gosh, I don't know what more you'd want.
It's a lot like there are a lot of it's a lot like a story of, and from Ohio State with Woody Hayes. Them standing in the tunnel in Michigan, and, you know, the whole crowd is booing, and he turns to his team and says, listen to that, boys, that's the sound of respect.
That's true. That's true. Was there a Reggie Jackson that says they don't boo non-athletes, they don't boo non-stars, they don't waste their time. So
yeah.
Booing is a way of respect, you're right. I think that's it. And it particularly gets focused on Sidney because he's the widely regarded face of the league, and, of course, that causes some envy. Well, why not our guys? Well, here's the answer. This is my answer. to be an ambassador like Gordie Howe was, like Bobby Orr was after him, like Gretzky was after him, and like we had no one really for 7 years after Gretzky retired, no one who would do all the local shows would be willing to do that. You have to be not only an elite player, Crosby is, you have to be very good with English, even if you're not native North American. You have to be good with the language. And C, you have to be willing. Now, that's the thing that separates an awful lot of the guys, because that requires a lot of time. It requires a lot of energy, and it requires a certain sacrifice of your life. And not everybody is willing to do that. But Sid is willing to do it, and even though he didn't seek it out, he has not turned it away, as some others have, because he realizes it's important for his team and it's important for the sport, and so he plows ahead. The sad thing is we really miss that kind of a person when we don't have him.
Yeah, certainly. Well, Doc, as we're kind of winding down and getting to toward the end of the show here, I want to.
Oh, okay. Well, this has been a lot of fun, you guys.
Well, great.
Yes.
It's pleasure is all on our side. Trust me, and I know we're following live on Twitter and all those things too, and they're loving
okay.
the show. So Pittsburgh is happy to have you on the show here tonight, and I got to ask you a question for them. We're watching the barn across the street fall into a pile of rubble slowly and painfully. What's your favorite memory from the old Civic Arena?
There were several. First, the first NHL game that I ever saw was there. I was teaching at Geneva, and it was in 1969-70. It was the Penguins and the Montreal Canadiens. We took a bus down. Some of the faculty members took a bus down and saw that. So the first game I ever saw in the NHL was there. There were so many involving Lemieux because, at the back door of Civic Arena, he'd walk in the back door and you'd see that game face on, not all the time, but sometimes, and you realized, oh, great, because he had that ability to take over a game. The unfortunate thing for them is they never won the thing at home. Mm-hmm. And, even in Detroit, they won it there. They didn't win it at home. So I think that's one thing that's waiting. But I think the event where they unretired his number and he came back, I think that would be one. I think the goal he scored against the Minnesota North Stars that's been replayed over and over again. I think many of the highlights that come to my mind involve Mario Lemieux. And then Crosby, of course, getting so many important goals for them, and Malkin the same. But it's hard to really put your finger on one. Obviously, I'm having trouble doing that. I think that a game I remember was the one that Detroit won there to win the Stanley Cup on Pittsburgh ice. And then what made it sweeter for Penguins fans was that Pittsburgh turned the tables on them in a thrilling finish. So we had a Game 6 finish in 08 where the puck slithered wide of Osgood in the net after the horn had sounded. I believe Hossa shot it. And then the next year, Nick Lidstrom, of all people, who is probably 15 feet from the net and on the left side, which he normally plays, gets the challenge from Fleury at the horn with a second and a half to go and makes the save, and that clinches it for the Penguins. I just hope there's a rubber match in a final between these two teams in the next 3 or 4 years. Lidstrom may have retired by that time, although his coach says he could probably play 3 or 4 more years if he wanted to. But both of those teams now have some really good young players that are going to still be under contract with them, like Zetterberg and Datsyuk, for 2-3 more years at least. So that gives us hope that with Jimmy Howard and with Marc-Andre Fleury that we might see another final between Detroit and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that would certainly be something. Doc, just final question here. Your story is really inspirational to me because you went to Manchester College and you went to a lot of these schools, got a PhD in communications from Bowling Green State, and then you taught at Geneva College in Pittsburgh, and then you got your first experience in the NHL as an unpaid correspondent for the Beaver County Times newspaper. A lot of the people listening here and a lot of us really, we're all young bloggers, and we have some dreams of being a broadcaster or somewhere in the field, especially in hockey. Just kind of talk about the whole experience there and going as an unpaid correspondent, just going for your passion, just working, even if you're not paid, you know, you're having fun at work. Just it had to be really worth it, considering your situation, too, just the way it worked out for you. Just if you could give any advice to, you know, possible young broadcasters or young journalists or whatever, what would you tell them?
Don't quit. Because that's one of the tempting things when you get frustrated and sometimes things don't happen for you quickly enough. Well, I'm going to find something else to do. And sometimes that is forced upon you because of other factors in your life. Perhaps there is a death in the family and you have to go to work and you can't toy with a dream because there are realistic considerations with your life. Maybe you fall in love and you get married and sometimes the pay in the first broadcasting job, mine was $160 a week, is not enough to really support a family if you want to raise one. So you need to find something else to do. But if you are able to sacrifice those things and not worry about the cash right away, and that was the case with me. I spent a lot of time going to hockey games and sitting in the corner of arenas and doing games into a cassette recorder to myself. And sometimes I paid and bought a ticket to do that. Didn't make anything on it, but I got some experience, even though it was not to an audience. Those are, if you worry about whether you're going to get paid or not, why you probably need to find a job where you do get paid, but it may not be the job that you want in hockey, and it may not be fun. There's no rule that says that you have to hate the job you go to, and I'm very fortunate. I think it may not be as noble a profession as saving lives, but it does pay, and you can use money that you make from that you set aside to make people's lives better through contribution of time or through giving to charity. But the other thing, too, is that at the end of the day, if you like what you do, it's not really work. For example, tonight, I spent time working on the Montreal lineup and biographies for tomorrow. Was it drudgery? No. Occasionally, I'll talk, as I will next month, to Fordham University. And I'll say something like, and I'm not trying to be superioric at all, but I'll say something like, tonight you're probably going to go home and read about Western civilization or kinesiology or accounting or something like that. I'm going back to the hotel and study up on the Bruins and the Devils. I've done what you've done, and I'm doing what I'm doing here. Given the choice, I like the way I'm going to spend my evening better. But recognize that you're doing this for a reason just as I am. It is hard to get the first job. It does require some work, but it sure is a lot of fun. It's sort of the ideal toy company of existence. You go to work every day, and most people are in a pretty good mood, especially I've found in hockey. Most people are in a really good mood, and there's nothing that says you have to spend your lifetime in drudgery. So I would say sacrifice. Recognize that you may not get paid for everything you do that brings experience to you, but don't give up. There'll be enough people who will that it will thin out the competition. And I know when I was in school, people would come from the business, and they would say a couple of things. They would say, you won't make much money in your first job. There's a lot of competition for it. You work long hours, and you work holidays. All of those things are true, but you get in free. You get a good seat for the game. You eventually get to work with the best athletes in the world. And eventually, somebody sends you something in the mail twice a month. And the job is fun. And there's nothing wrong with spending your life doing that.
Absolutely. It's really fun listening to you as well. And before we let you go here, wanted if we could have you do a show plug for us, just saying, this is Doc Emmerich, and you're listening to the Pens Nation radio show, please.
Pens Nation radio show.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, and do I tell them to listen to it a certain way? Is there something they need? Is there a website they need to dial up? Or they're already doing it if they're listening, right?
Yeah, they're already listening to it, so you can just say.
I don't need to give them an address. They've already found it.
Oh, yeah, you're good.
the Pens Nation, what is it?
The Pens Nation radio show.
Okay. Hi, this is Doc Emmerich. You found the right place if you're a Penguins fan, the Pens Nation radio show. Just stay right here.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Doc. You've been incredible.
Okay.
With, one of the best interviews we've had.
Well, good. I'm glad. Well, your squad plays tomorrow, right?
Yes, Anaheim.
Yeah, I'll be here watching Boston battle Montreal, maybe literally battle. They'll probably be ticked off, and, you know, both teams are coming off losses now. So that will be fun. I'll be thinking of you guys. So Nick and Ken and Joe and Andy, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, 4 for 4, and it's late at night, and I started at 3:30 this morning. I must be okay. All right. Take care. Andy, tell your mom hi.
All right, we'll do.
Okay. Be good.
Thanks.
So long.
See you, Doc.
Thanks, man. Did Doc Emmerich just hit on your mom, Andy?
I think he did.
Tell your mom hi. Yes.
He played fantasy camp, Pirates fantasy camp with her. So, yeah, that's it. But people wouldn't know that. The average listener wouldn't know that.
I wish I had not said anything about it. Just let him hang on it.
Oh, my goodness.
What an unbelievable interview.
Wow.
There's something to be – I mean, what an honest and genuine man he is, period. You know, just not just a great hockey mind, but I mean, it really comes out. You know, you hear so many stories and how what a class act he is, and it really comes through, especially in the answer to Andy's last question.
That was great.
I mean, Doc is not doing this to make a paycheck. He's not doing this to work. He's doing it because it's his true passion. He's not doing it for attention. He's doing it because it's his true passion. He's not doing it for the narcissistic part of it because it's his true passion. I don't have anything else to say about that. I mean, it's beautiful.
Well, you know, they say don't meet your heroes and you know, things like that. And that's always a saying that, you know, you always hear when there's people that are in your profession or your desired profession that you know, think so highly of. But I got to be honest, after getting to talk to Doc, you know, pre-show and everything, about an hour now, I got to say I have more, you know, I didn't think I could possibly have any more respect for the guy than I already do, but I really do. I mean, just a great guy, loves what he does, so genuine, knowledgeable, fun, funny, you know, just – A great person. I really wish that everyone could wake up in the morning and go to their jobs or go to class or do what they do on a daily basis with the fervor and enthusiasm that Doc Emmerich has, because that was really just listen to my favorite play-by-play guy in sports, period. Just come on and just talk about hockey and life with that kind of emotion. It really means a lot, and it was really, really exciting to do that.
Mm. No words.
And okay, a 45-minute interview, and there's never a sense of urgency for him to get this over with or get it done or anything like that. I mean,
no awkward pauses either.
No, he makes up for our idiocy, doesn't he?
I think he makes everybody kind of look like an idiot, because Doc Emmerich is just that damn good when it comes to hockey.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. It's great to see someone with such a passion and do someone that does their job extremely well, you know, and it's always fun to kind of watch those kind of people throughout life, no matter what it is. I mean, in Doc's case, it happens to be he's great at calling a hockey game. And I was talking with my wife earlier today about this, like, who Doc Emmerich is and why it's such a big deal to have him on the show. And I had her listen to some of his calls, you know, and she's like, you could listen to this with your eyes closed and see the entire game as if it's right in front of you, and it's not there. And that's just, man, that's just a special talent right there to have.
Yeah. He's everything he's advertised.
And, you know, we have another guy who's a lot like that in Pittsburgh, in Mike Lang.
Yep.
Because, I mean, by all accounts, he's the same exact way. As far as the passion he has for his work, the way he got there, he and Doc really have very similar stories in that sense. And I know that I definitely know they have mutual respect for one another. So I mean, we're lucky to have figures like that to look up to, not just if you're a broadcaster or a sports fan or anything, but, you know, just people in life, period. So, Bens and Ducks tomorrow night.
Yeah, it does kind of, it feels almost empty
tomorrow?
To bring it up. Yeah, I know. I know. But, boy, these
it's going to be a good game.
Anaheim
both
Ducks
teams
are
playing so well right now. Yeah.
The Ducks are red hot just now after the win tonight. It seemed like that they were a total lost cause. They're just 8 points back of the 8th seed in the Western Conference. They are just really coming into their own finally after getting off of that awful start. And that team has so much talent that no matter where they are in the standings, you could never, ever, ever, ever count them out. You got Tamu Solani, Bobby Ryan, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, the defending league MVP. Giannis Hiller, when he's on, is definitely one of the more talented goalies in the Western Conference. Just, there's a lot of questions there on D, but if they can really kind of get it going and play as a cohesive unit, which it seems like Bruce Boudreau has them doing, the sky's the limit for them, and I don't see why they couldn't possibly get back into a, 8-seed playoff discussion right now. So it's surprising that the Los Angeles Kings have made all of these moves and there was so much hype surrounding them, but the hot team right now in SoCal is the Anaheim Ducks, and they're coming into our house tomorrow night.
I'm trying to think, was the last time the Ducks and the Pens met, and this shows you how much research I've done, the anti-Doc Emmerich here. It was the game that
fall of 2007.
Yeah, Crosby made the save on the goal line.
Yep, just the second game of the season. It was. You're absolutely right. It was fall 2007. That was a really exciting game. Yeah, I remember that very well. That was a nice way to kick off the season for the Pittsburgh Penguins with the win that year, at least at home.
And it usually is an entertaining match, and it might be a preview of the Tamu Solani show in Pittsburgh, right?
Oh, and we've already talked about
that. I can't see the Ducks being. Ducks being sellers at this point, too, with them being on the cusp of getting into the playoffs. I mean, maybe they're one of the teams that are looking to be a buyer. And 20 days ago, that wasn't the case.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, it, yeah, it's especially with the situation with them and Lubomir Visnovsky. It just seems like there was a lot of trade rumors surrounding him and that they were asking for a, pretty significant bargain. They just restructured Francois Beauchemin's contract, even though, they significantly overpaid for him. Look at what he's making next year and look what Chris Letang's making next year. But, they certainly do have some options there. I think Cam Fowler is eventually going to be one of the better offensive defensemen in the National Hockey League. He might need to add a little bit of size. But, there are a lot of pieces to the Anaheim Ducks. Their big issue, I think, when it really comes down to it, is the grittiness, the dirtiness, the going to the corners. The Penguins are just going to have to play that kind of game, and we all know that they can play it and play it well. Anaheim doesn't really have a lot of those guys like Matt Bolesky. Those players, they just don't quite bring the style of grit and the style of two-way play that players like Pascal Dupuis and Dustin Jeffrey and Jordan Staal and Chris Kunitz, they don't really bring that sort of type, and they don't really create they don't have a balanced line to create a lot of space. They kind of just overpower you with the skill. If it works out, they win. If they don't, they lose. Whereas Pittsburgh can really kind of skate some balanced lines and play a system and create a lot of space. So if the Pens can play their system, I definitely see this as a win. And when you play the Western Conference, a team that's not in the playoff spot, you got to pick up those 2 points because, even if it goes to OT, that's still a point that's not going to be able to be made up by the other teams in your conference. So these Western Conference games getting ready to head into the crucial stretch of the season, very important stuff.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. You look at all the younger players, F. Perry, Getzlaff, Ryan. Tamu Solani just has more points than all of them. That guy is phenomenal.
Oh, man.
Still toying with our emotions.
I love you, Tamu Solani.
God.
Yeah.
Other than Lemieux, my favorite player of all time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, we talk about Tamu maybe once every month on this show, and it's just like Tamu love fest.
And this, this could be the last time he comes to Pittsburgh, so.
Yeah, unless he gets traded here.
Yeah. That'd be, oh man, I can't know about that.
I wouldn't be able to contain myself.
Yeah,
I mean,
that would be. Oh.
For a guy that's about 40 years old, he's still putting up more points than the guys on his team that are 25 and that have won MVPs, you know, like, on his team. That says something for about the quality of player that he is, you know.
The Penguins also, I mean, there are scouts all across the league, but one of the teams they were scouting tonight, according to Aaron Portsline, was the Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm not sure exactly what the Blue Jackets have that the Penguins would be looking to buy, but that's at least worth mentioning that the Penguins are looking there. And it might not be the Blue Jackets, of course. They were playing St. Louis tonight. But so Columbus and St. Louis, we had scouts in the building.
Man, the Rick Nash rumors all day today.
Oh my God.
Those were some of the most outlandish, especially connected to the Pens. Oh my gosh. Nash for Stahl straight up. Yeah, I might be passing on that.
Yeah, I'm not doing that trade.
I'm not doing that.
Not a thousand years.
If you want to see some hilarity, get on the Pens blog and check out their what they did in terms
with
of Eklund.
Yeah,
and the stuff
great
that Eklund posted and how he kind of turned it around. Just truly, truly hysterical. I'm almost convinced that the people that follow Eklund, it's just purely for comedy at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. He was like, it's glad somebody clarified this or whatever after he said that it was done. Like, it's almost a done deal. So stupid. And Ty Clark's accusing me of being one of these.
I don't know if I'd, it's a compliment come from Cy, and he means it as one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to be connected to Eklund.
I don't want to be connected to that guy.
Yeah, I follow Eklund on Instagram just for pure entertainment value. He'll post the stupidest picture sometimes.
I love how he puts his phone number out.
Oh, I've called him before.
I know.
Actually, is it? Pull it up real fast.
Oh, no.
let's drive this show into a mountain.
Just, we put Doc Emmerich to Eklund. That's like, oh, man. It's going really low. It's like going from.
Yeah.
No.
As high as you can go to about as low as you can go in 10 minutes.
Wow. We pulling this up.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
Or Peter.
Last time I Peter Svoboda. Calling us Peter Svoboda.
Yarmer Yager.
What's his Twitter handle? I don't follow him.
Wait, who?
Eklund. There we
just
go.
Just Eklund.
All right, there's the number. And this is Skype. Oh, wait, first of all. I can't believe I'm doing this.
It's 10:58. Have some respect.
Have some respect.
We're trading the Eastern time zone for the Pacific time zone, E4. Wake up, Eck. We have some inside information on Nash.
All right. Last time I tried this phone number, it did not work. So, and I'm not hearing it ring right now.
There's 32 NHL GMs that are forcing him to sleep with the fishes tonight.
No, it's a no-go.
It's not going through.
It's kind of like the trade rumors. They're just not going through.
Who called into the show? Was it Ken?
How do it was sources? get a hold of them. Yeah, I called. I mean.
Yeah, pull that up because you're going to have to do that.
Oh,
that's
really?
Why it's not going through. Yeah, click the little down arrow and hit send call. I'm curious to see what this guy sounds like.
It's not letting me add it.
Well, that sucks. All right, well, we can move on from Eklund.
Oh, man, I made the mistake of tweeting that that might happen. Now everybody's excited about it. <It's>...
All right, well, let's make it happen. All right.
Oh, well, let's
I'll text you the number there. There it is. There's
okay.
The number. Add that.
Well, what we'll do is let's try to make this happen tomorrow night.
All right.
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live.
Get it live, yo.
Yeah. Hello.
I mean, we've even got our buddy Mike Mark Torrance from the Nashville Predator blog, Forechecker. He wants to listen in if we're going to be calling up Eklund, so.
All right. Yeah, we need to have Eklund on tomorrow night. We'll make this happen.
Eklund.
See, the Penn's blog post is awesome. And then the GIF at the end. That is amazing. All right. Well, let's try to get to him. Whoever has good standing with him, I'm pretty sure I'm probably blocked. That's why I couldn't find him earlier. So, Andy, make sure you drop him a line and get him on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, Andy, you're the only person who's like really actually totally professional on Twitter. I've lost a lot of credibility over the past couple of weeks.
Although if you keep putting those freaking Creed quotes out.
Hey, those are only text messages. People back, thank you.
No, I wasn't talking about you, Ken. I was talking about Andy. He did I could take you higher today.
Into the sunlight. Welcome to all this.
That's a song stuck in my head.
I missed that. I was just walking around Lowe's, and I heard Nickelback. Look at this photograph.
Walking around Lowe's and stuff.
And I. And how much is that cheap buzzsaw?
Buying a tool.
I need to cut up some wood. No, but really. I thought of all you guys when I heard that song, so you guys should be touched.
Oh, we're touched.
Don't ever touch me again.
All right, so tomorrow night we'll have Eklund on the show. Thank you for downloading the podcast. And
it's confirmed, by the way, 100% confirmed. We have Eklund on the show tomorrow.
It is confirmed. E6. It is an E5. We have Eklund on the show tomorrow night. So go ahead and tell your friends.
E5.
Walking around low.
Well.
And stuff.
All right.
Well, we start with Mike Emmerich, and we go out with Nickelback.
Dracula. Well, see you later.
See you later.
Somebody shoot the show already.
Hey, fans, are you tired of hitting the snooze button multiple times a day every morning? Well, hit that snooze button no more. The Penns Nation, in conjunction with the Faceoff Factor, bring you the Ryan Mill Alarm Clock. Wake up to multiple different custom wake-up calls, such as Good Morning CEC! And this fan favorite, Hey Ben, get on your feet! It's time for your Morning Dunk! You can also set your Ryan Mill alarm clock to warn you prior to waking up. Ladies and gentlemen, there's 1 minute remaining to sleep. 1 minute remaining to sleep. You'll never want to hit that snooze button when you hear Ryan Mill scream at you to wake up! Wake up! Wake up!
You really nailed it in the ending there, Nick. For Nick Richter.
Yeah, it's what nightmares are made out of.
for Nick Richter, our buddy Jesse Marshall at the Faceoff Factory helping out with that also, at least the concept, Joe Depto, Andy Hughes, Doc Mike Emmerich on the show tonight. You've been listening to the Pens Nation Radio Show.